light over everything below. The flashing rays of the star within the gem made it appear as if a giant eye gazed down at them. Aragorn could only gape with wonder. Nothing had prepared him for this. It seemed impossible that Trondheim had been built by mortal beings. The city mountain shamed everything he had seen in the Empire. He doubted even if Urubane could match the wealth and grandeur displayed here. Trondheim was a stunning monument to the dwarves' power and perseverance. The bald man walked in front of Saphira and said, "You must go on foot from here." There was scattered booing from the crowd as he spoke. A dwarf took Tornak and Snowfire away. Aragorn dismounted Saphira but stayed by her side as the bald man led them across the carnelian floor to the right-hand hallway. They followed it for several hundred feet, then entered a smaller corridor. Their guards remained despite the cramped space. After four sharp turns, they came to a massive cedar door stained black with age. The bald man pulled it open and conducted everyone but the guards inside. Ajahad. Aragorn entered an elegant two-story study panelled with rows of cedar bookshelves. A wrought-iron staircase wound up to a small balcony with two chairs and a reading table. White lanterns hung along the walls and ceiling so a book could be read anywhere in the room. The stone floor was covered by an intricate oval rug. At the far end of the room, a man stood behind a large walnut desk. His skin gleamed the color of oiled ebony. The dome of his head was shaved bare, but a closely trimmed black beard covered his chin and upper lip. Strong features shadowed his face, and grave, intelligent eyes lurked under his brow. His shoulders were broad and powerful, emphasized by a tapered red vest embroidered with gold thread and clasped over a rich purple shirt. He bore himself with great dignity, exuding an intense, commanding air. When he spoke, his voice was strong and confident. "Welcome to Trondheim, Aragorn and Saphira. I am Ajahad. Please, seat yourselves." Aragorn slipped into an armchair next to Murtagh while Saphira settled protectively behind them. Ajahad raised his hand and snapped his fingers. A man stepped out from behind the staircase. He was identical to the bald man beside him. Aragorn stared at the two of them with surprise, and Murtagh stiffened. "Your confusion is understandable. They are twin brothers," said Ajahad with a small smile. "I would tell you their names, but they have none." Saphira hissed with distaste. Ajahad watched her for a moment, then sat in a high-backed chair behind the desk. The twins retreated under the stairs and stood impassively beside each other. Ajahad pressed his fingers together as he stared at Aragorn and Murtagh. He studied them for a long time with an unwavering gaze. Aragorn squirmed, uncomfortable. After what seemed like several minutes, Ajahad lowered his hands and beckoned to the twins. One of them hurried to his side. Ajahad whispered in his ear. The bald man suddenly paled and shook his head vigorously. Ajahad frowned, then nodded as if something had been confirmed. He looked at Murtagh. "You have placed me in a difficult position by refusing to be examined. You have been allowed into Farthen Dûr because the twins have assured me that they can control you and because of your actions on behalf of Aragorn and Arya. I understand that there may be things you wish to keep hidden in your mind, but as long as you do, we cannot trust you." "You wouldn't trust me anyway," said Murtagh defiantly. Ajahad's face darkened as Murtagh spoke, and his eyes flashed dangerously. "Though it has been 23 years since it last broke upon my ear, I know that voice." He stood ominously, chest swelling. The twins looked alarmed and put their heads together, whispering frantically. "It came from another man, one more beast than human. Get up." Murtagh warily complied, his eyes darting between the twins and Ajahad. "Remove your shirt," ordered Ajahad. With a shrug, Murtagh pulled off his tunic. "Now turn around." As he pivoted to the side, light fell upon the scar on his back. "Murtagh," breathed Ajahad. A grunt of surprise came from Auric. Without warning, Ajahad turned on the twins and thundered, "Did you know of this?" The twins bowed their heads. We discovered his name in Aragorn's mind, but we did not suspect that this boy was the son of one as powerful as Morzan. It never occurred.
And you didn't tell me?
Demanded Arjahad. He raised a hand, forestalling their explanation. We will discuss it later. He faced Murtagh again. First, I must untangle this muddle. Do you still refuse to be probed?
Yes, said Murtagh sharply, slipping back into his tunic. I won't let anyone inside of my head.
Arjahad leaned on his desk.
There will be unpleasant consequences if you don't. Unless the twins can certify that you aren't a threat, we cannot give you credence, despite and perhaps because of the assistance you have given Aragorn. Without that verification, the people here, dwarf and human alike, will tear you apart if they learn of your presence. I'll be forced to keep you confined at all times, as much for your protection as for ours. It will only get worse once the dwarf king Hrothgar demands custody of you.
Don't force yourself into that situation when it can easily be avoided.
Murtagh shook his head stubbornly. No,
even if I were to submit, I would still be treated like a leper and an outcast. All I wish is to leave. If you let me do that peacefully, I'll never reveal your location to the Empire.
What will happen if you are captured and brought before Galbatorix? Demanded Arjahad. He will extract every secret from your mind, no matter how strong you may be. Even if you could resist him, how can we trust that you won't rejoin him in the future? I cannot take that chance.
Will you hold me prisoner forever? Demanded Murtagh, straightening.
No, said Arjahad, only until you let yourself be examined. If you are found trustworthy, the twins will remove all knowledge of Fathandur's location from your mind before you leave. We won't risk someone with those memories falling into Galbatorix's hands.
What is it to be, Murtagh? Decide quickly, or else the path will be chosen for you.
Just give in.
Aragorn pleaded silently, concerned for Murtagh's safety.
It's not worth the fight.
Finally, Murtagh spoke, the words slow and distinct. My mind is the one sanctuary that has not been stolen from me. Men have tried to breach it before, but I've learned to defend it vigorously, for I am only safe with my innermost thoughts. You have asked for the one thing I cannot give, least of all to those two. He gestured at the twins. Do with me what you will, but know this. Death will take me before I'll expose myself to their probing. Admiration glinted in Arjahad's eyes.
I'm not surprised by your choice, though I had hoped otherwise. Guards!
The cedar door slammed open as warriors rushed in, weapons ready. Arjahad pointed at Murtagh and commanded,
Take him to a windowless room and bar the door securely. Post 6 men by the entrance and allow no one inside until I come to see him. Do not speak to him either.
The warriors surrounded Murtagh, watching him suspiciously. As they left the study, Aragorn caught Murtagh's attention and mouthed,
I'm sorry.
Murtagh shrugged, then stared forward resolutely. He vanished into the hallway with the men. The sound of their feet faded into silence.
Arjahad said abruptly, I want everyone out of this room but Aragorn and Saphira, now!
Bowing, the twins departed, but Oryk said,
Sir, the king will want to know of Murtagh, and there is still the matter of my insubordination.
Arjahad frowned, then waved his hand.
I will tell Hrothgar myself. As for your actions, wait outside until I call for you, and don't let the twins get away. I'm not done with them, either.
Very well, said Oryk, inclining his head.
He closed the door with a solid thump. After a long silence, Arjahad sat with a tired sigh. He ran a hand over his face and stared at the ceiling. Aragorn waited impatiently for him to speak. When nothing was forthcoming, he blurted, Is Arya all right? Arjahad looked down at him and said gravely,
No, but the healers tell me she will recover. They worked on her all through the night. The poison took a dreadful toll on her. She wouldn't have lived if not for you. For that you have the Varden's deepest thanks.
Aragorn's shoulders slumped with relief. For the first time he felt that their flight from Gilead had been worth the effort. "So what now?" he asked. "I need you to tell me how you found Sephira and everything that's happened since," said Arjahat, forming a steeple with his fingers. "Some of it I know from the message Brom sent us, other parts from the twins, but I want to hear it from you, especially the details concerning Brom's death." Aragorn was reluctant to share his experiences with a stranger, but Arjahat was patient.
"Go on,"
urged Sephira gently. Aragorn shifted, then began his story. It was awkward at first, but grew easier as he proceeded. Sephira helped him to remember things clearly with occasional comments. Arjahat listened intently the entire time. Aragorn talked for hours, often pausing between his words. He told Arjahat of Tirm, though he kept Angela's fortune-telling to himself, and how he and Brom had found the Razak. He even related his dreams of Arya. When he came to Gilead and mentioned the Shade, Arjahad's face hardened, and he leaned back with veiled eyes. When his narrative was complete, Aragorn fell silent, brooding on all that had occurred. Arjahat stood, clasped his hands behind his back, and absently studied one of the bookshelves. After a time, he returned to the desk.
"Brom's death is a terrible loss. He was a close friend of mine and a powerful ally of the Varden. He saved us from destruction many times through his bravery and intelligence. Even now, when he is gone, he's provided us with the one thing that can ensure our success. You."
"But what can you expect me to accomplish?" asked Aragorn.
"I will explain it in full," said Arjahat. "But there are more urgent matters to be dealt with first. The news of the Urgal's alliance with the Empire is extremely serious. If Galbatorix is gathering an Urgal army to destroy us, the Varden will be hard-pressed to survive, even though many of us are protected here in Farthendur. That a rider, even one as evil as Galbatorix, would consider a pact with such monsters is indeed proof of madness. I shudder to think of what he promised them in return for their fickle loyalty. And then there is the Shade. Can you describe him?"
Aragorn nodded.
"He was tall, thin, and very pale, with red eyes and hair. He was dressed all in black."
"What of his sword? Did you see it?" asked Arjahat intensely. "Did it have a long scratch on the blade?"
"Yes," said Aragorn, surprised. "How did you know?"
"Because I put it there while trying to cut out his heart," said Arjahat with a grim smile. "His name is Durza, one of the most vicious and cunning fiends ever to stalk this land. He is the perfect servant for Galbatorix and a dangerous enemy for us. You say that you killed him. How was it done?"
Aragorn remembered it vividly. "Murtagh shot him twice. The first arrow caught him in the shoulder, the second one struck him between the eyes."
"I was afraid of that," said Arjahat, frowning. "You didn't kill him. Shades can only be destroyed by a thrust through the heart. Anything short of that will cause them to vanish and then reappear elsewhere in spirit form. It's an unpleasant process, but Durza will survive and return stronger than ever."
A moody silence settled over them like a foreboding thunderhead. Then Arjahat stated,
"You are an enigma, Aragorn, a quandary that no one knows how to solve. Everyone knows what the Varden want, or the Urgals, or even Galbatorix, but no one knows what you want. And that makes you dangerous, especially to Galbatorix. He fears you because he doesn't know what you will do next."
"Do the Varden fear me?" asked Aragorn quietly.
"No," said Arjahat carefully. "We are hopeful. But if that hope proves false, then yes, we will be afraid."
Aragorn looked down.
"You must understand the unusual nature of your position. There are factions who want you to serve their interests and no one else's. The moment you entered Farthendur, their influence and power began tugging on you."
"Including yours?" asked Aragorn.
Arjahat chuckled, though his eyes were sharp.
"Including mine. There are certain things you should know. First is how Sephira's egg happened to appear in the spine. Did Brom ever tell you what was done with her egg after he brought it here?"
"No," said Aragorn, glancing at Sephira. She blinked and flicked her tongue at him.
Arjahat tapped his desk before beginning.
When Brom first brought the egg to the Varden, everyone was deeply interested in its fate. We had thought the dragons were exterminated. The dwarves were solely concerned with making sure that the future rider would be an ally, though some of them were opposed to having a new rider at all, while the elves and the Varden had a more personal stake in the matter. The reason was simple enough. Throughout history, all the riders have either been elven or human, with the majority being elven. There has never been a dwarf rider. Because of Galbatorix's betrayals, the elves were reluctant to let any of the Varden handle the egg, for fear that the dragon inside would hatch for a human with similar instabilities. It was a challenging situation, as both sides wanted the rider for their own. The dwarves only aggravated the problem by arguing obstinately with both the elves and us whenever they had the chance. Tensions escalated, and before long threats were made that were later regretted. It was then that Brom suggested a compromise that allowed all sides to save face. He proposed that the egg be ferried between the Varden and the elves every year. At each place children would parade past it, and then the bearers of the egg would wait to see if the dragon would hatch. If it didn't, they would leave and return to the other group. But if the dragon did hatch, the new rider's training would be undertaken immediately. For the first year or so, he or she would be instructed here by Brom, then the rider would be taken to the elves, who would finish the education. The elves reluctantly accepted this plan, with the stipulation that if Brom were to die before the dragon hatched, they would be free to train the new rider without interference. The agreement was slanted in their favor. We both knew that the dragon would likely choose an elf, but it provided a desperately needed semblance of equality. Arjihad paused, his rich eyes somber. Shadows bit into his face under his cheekbones, making them jut out. It was hoped that this new rider would bring our two races closer together. We waited for well over a decade, but the egg never hatched. The matter passed from our minds, and we rarely thought about it except to lament the egg's inactivity. Then last year we suffered a terrible loss. Arya and the egg disappeared on her return from Trondheim to the elven city, Osylan. The elves were the first to discover she was missing. They found her steed and guard slain in Dueldenvarden, and a group of slaughtered Urgals nearby. But neither Arya nor the egg was there. When this news reached me, I feared that Urgals had both of them, and would soon learn the location of Farthendur and the elves' capital, Aelasmira, where their queen Islanzadi lives. Now I understand they were working for the Empire, which is far worse. We won't know exactly what occurred during that attack until Arya wakes, but I have deduced a few details from what you've said. Arjahad's vest rustled as he leaned his elbows on the desk. The attack must have been swift and decisive, else Arya would have escaped. Without any warning and deprived of a place to hide, she could have done only one thing. Used magic to transport the egg elsewhere.
She can use magic? Asked Aragorn.
Arya had mentioned that she had been given a drug to suppress her power. He wanted to confirm that she meant magic. He wondered if she could teach him more words of the ancient language.
It was one of the reasons why she was chosen to guard the egg.
Anyway, Arya couldn't have returned it to us. She was too far away, and the elves' realm is warded by arcane barriers that prevent anything from entering their borders through magical means. She must have thought of Brom, and in desperation sent the egg toward Carvahal. Without time to prepare, I'm not surprised she missed by the margin she did. The twins tell me it is an imprecise art.
Why was she closer to Palancar Valley than the Varden? Asked Aragorn. Where do the elves really live? Where is this Aelasmira?
Arjahad's keen gaze bored into Aragorn as he considered the question.
I don't tell you this lightly, for the elves guard the knowledge jealously. But you should know, and I do this as a display of trust. Their cities lie far to the north in the deepest reaches of the endless forest Dueldenvarden. Not since the rider's time has anyone, dwarf or human, been elf-trained enough to walk in their leafy halls. I do not even know how to find Aelasmira. As for Osylan, based on where Arya disappeared, I suspect it is near Dueldenvarden's western edge, toward Carvahal.
You must have many other questions, but bear with me and keep them until I have finished.
He gathered his memories, then spoke at a quickened pace.
When Arya disappeared, the elves withdrew their support from the Varden. Queen Islanzadi was especially enraged and refused any further contact with us. As a result, even though I received Brom's message, the elves are still ignorant of you and Saphira. Without their supplies to sustain my troops, we have fared badly these past months in skirmishes with the Empire. With Arya's return and your arrival, I expect the Queen's hostility will abate. The fact that you rescued Arya will greatly help our case with her. Your training, however, is going to present a problem for both Varden and Elves. Brom obviously had a chance to teach you, but we need to know how thorough he was. For that reason, you'll have to be tested to determine the extent of your abilities. Also, the Elves will expect you to finish your training with them, though I'm not sure if there's time for that.
Why not? Asked Aragorn.
For several reasons. Chief among them, the tidings you brought about the Urgals, said Arjahad, his eyes strained to Saphira.
You see, Aragorn, the Varden are in an extremely delicate position. On one hand, we have to comply with the elves' wishes if we want to keep them as allies. At the same time, we cannot anger the dwarves if we wish to lodge in Trondheim.
Are the dwarves part of the Varden? Asked Aragorn.
Arjahad hesitated.
In a sense, yes. They allow us to live here and provide assistance in our struggle against the Empire, but they are loyal only to their king. I have no power over them except for what Hrothgar gives me, and even he often has trouble with the dwarf clans. The 13 clans are subservient to Hrothgar, but each clan chief wields enormous power. They choose the new dwarf king when the old one dies. Hrothgar is sympathetic to our cause, but many of the chiefs aren't. He can't afford to anger them unnecessarily or he'll lose the support of his people, so his actions on our behalf have been severely circumscribed.
These clan chiefs, said Aragorn, are they against me as well?
Even more so, I'm afraid, said Arjahad wearily. There has long been enmity between dwarves and dragons. Before the elves came and made peace, dragons made a regular habit of eating the dwarves' flocks and stealing their gold. And the dwarves are slow to forget past wrongs. Indeed, they never fully accepted the riders or allowed them to police their kingdom. Galbatorix's rise to power has only served to convince many of them that it would be better never to deal with riders or dragons ever again.
He directed his last words at Saphira.
Aragorn said slowly, Why doesn't Galbatorix know where Farthendur and Ellesmira are? Surely he was told of them when he was instructed by the riders.
Told of them, yes. Shown where they are, no. It's one thing to know that Farthendur lies within these mountains, quite another to find it. Galbatorix hadn't been taken to either place before his dragon was killed. After that, of course, the riders didn't trust him. He tried to force the information out of several riders during his rebellion, but they chose to die rather than reveal it to him. As for the dwarves, he's never managed to capture one alive. Though it's only a matter of time.
Then why doesn't he just take an army and march through Duveldenvarden until he finds Ellesmira? Asked Aragorn.
Because the elves still have enough power to resist him, said Arjahad. He doesn't dare test his strength against theirs, at least not yet. But his cursed sorcery grows stronger every year. With another rider at his side, he would be unstoppable. He keeps trying to get one of his two eggs to hatch. But so far he's been unsuccessful.
Aragorn was puzzled.
How can his power be increasing? The strength of his body limits his abilities. It can't build itself up forever.
We don't know, said Arjahad, shrugging his broad shoulders, and neither do the elves. We can only hope that some day he will be destroyed by one of his own spells.
He reached inside his vest and somberly pulled out a battered piece of parchment.
Do you know what this is?
He asked, placing it on the desk.
Aragorn bent forward and examined it.
Lines of black script written in an alien language were inked across the page. Large sections of the writing had been destroyed by blots of blood. One edge of the parchment was charred. He shook his head.
No, I don't. It was taken from the leader of the Urgal host we destroyed last night,
It cost us 12 men to do so. They sacrificed themselves so that you might escape safely. The writing is the king's invention, a script he uses to communicate with his servants. It took me a while, but I was able to devise its meaning, at least where it's legible. It reads, "Gatekeeper at Ithro Jada is to let this bearer and his minions pass. They are to be bunked with the others of their kind and by... but only if the two factions refrain from fighting. Command will be given under Tarok, under Gaj, under Durza, under Ushnak the Mighty." Ushnak is Galbatorix. It means father in the Urgal tongue, an affectation that pleases him. "Find what they are suitable for, and the footmen and are to be kept separate. No weapons are to be distributed until for marching." "Nothing else can be read past there, except for a few vague words," said Arjahad. "Where's Ithro Jada? I've never heard of it."
"Nor have I," confirmed Arjahad. "Which makes me suspect that Galbatorix has renamed an existing place for his own purposes. After deciphering this, I asked myself what hundreds of Urgals were doing by the Beor Mountains where you first saw them, and where they were going. The parchment mentions others of their kind, so I assume there are even more Urgals at their destination. There's only one reason for the king to gather such a force, to forge a bastard army of humans and monsters to destroy us. For now there is nothing to do but wait and watch. Without further information, we cannot find this Ithro Jada. Still, Farthendur has not yet been discovered, so there is hope. The only Urgals to have seen it died last night."
"How did you know we were coming?" asked Aragorn. "One of the twins was waiting for us, and there was an ambush in place for the Cull."
He was aware of Saphira listening intently. Though she kept her own counsel, he knew she would have things to say later.
"We have sentinels placed at the entrance of the valley you traveled through, on either side of the Beartooth River. They sent a dove to warn us," explained Arjahad.
Aragorn wondered if it was the same bird Saphira had tried to eat.
"When the egg and Arya disappeared, did you tell Brom? He said that he hadn't heard anything from the Varden."
"We tried to alert him," said Arjahad, "but I suspect our men were intercepted and killed by the Empire. Why else would the Razek have gone to Carvajal? After that, Brom was traveling with you and it was impossible to get word to him. I was relieved when he contacted me via messenger from Tirm. It didn't surprise me that he went to Jode. They were old friends, and Jode could easily send us a message because he smuggled supplies to us through Cirda. All of this has raised serious questions. How did the Empire know where to ambush Arya, and later our messengers to Carvajal? How has Galbatorix learned which merchants helped the Varden? Jode's business has been virtually destroyed since you left him, as have those of other merchants who support us. Every time one of their ships sets sail, it disappears. The dwarves cannot give us everything we need, so the Varden are in desperate need of supplies. I'm afraid that we have a traitor or traitors in our midst, despite our efforts to examine people's minds for deceit."
Aragorn sank deep in thought, pondering what he had learned. Arjahad waited calmly for him to speak, undisturbed by the silence. For the first time since finding Saphira's egg, Aragorn felt that he understood what was going on around him. At last he knew where Saphira came from and what might lie in his future. "What do you want from me?" he asked.
"How do you mean?"
"I mean, what is expected of me in Trondheim? You and the elves have plans for me, but what if I don't like them?"
A hard note crept into his voice. "I'll fight when needed, revel when there's occasion, mourn when there is grief, and die if my time comes, but I won't let anyone use me against my will."
He paused to let the words sink in. "The writers of old were arbiters of justice above and beyond the leaders of their time. I don't claim that position. I doubt people would accept such oversight when they've been free of it all their lives, especially from one as young as me. But I do have power, and I will wield it as I see fit. What I want to know is how you plan to use me. Then I will decide whether to agree to it.
Al-Jahad looked at him wryly.
If you were anyone else and were before another leader, you would likely have been killed for that insolent speech. What makes you think I will expose my plans just because you demand it?
Aragorn flushed, but did not lower his gaze.
Still, you are right. Your position gives you the privilege to say such things. You cannot escape the politics of your situation. You will be influenced one way or another. I don't want to see you become a pawn of any one group or purpose any more than you do. You must retain your freedom, for in it lies your true power, the ability to make choices independent of any leader or king. My own authority over you will be limited, but I believe it's for the best. The difficulty lies in making sure that those with power include you in their deliberations. Also, despite your protests, the people here have certain expectations of you. They are going to bring you their problems no matter how petty and demand that you solve them.
Al-Jahad leaned forward, his voice deadly serious. There will be cases where someone's future will rest in your hands. With a word, you can send them careening into happiness or misery. Young women will seek your opinion on whom they should marry. Many will pursue you as a husband. And old men will ask which of their children should receive an inheritance. You must be kind and wise with them all, for they put their trust in you. Don't speak flippantly or without thought, because your words will have impact far beyond what you intend.
Al-Jahad leaned back, his eyes hooded.
The burden of leadership is being responsible for the well-being of the people in your charge. I have dealt with it from the day I was chosen to head the Varden, and now you must as well. Be careful. I won't tolerate injustice under my command. Don't worry about your youth and inexperience. They will pass soon enough.
Aragorn was uncomfortable with the idea of people asking him for advice.
But you still haven't said what I'm to do here.
For now, nothing. You covered over 130 leagues in 8 days, a feat to be proud of. I'm sure that you'll appreciate rest. When you've recovered, we will test your competency in arms and magic. After that, well, I will explain your options, and then you'll have to decide your course.
And what about Murtagh? Asked Aragorn, bitingly.
Al-Jahad's face darkened. He reached beneath his desk and lifted up Zarok. The sword's polished sheath gleamed in the light.
Al-Jahad slid his hand over it, lingering on the etched sigil.
He will remain here until he allows the twins into his mind.
You can't imprison him, argued Aragorn. He's committed no crime.
We can't give him his freedom without being sure that he won't turn against us. Innocent or not, he's potentially as dangerous to us as his father was, said Al-Jahad, with a hint of sadness.
Aragorn realized that Al-Jahad would not be convinced otherwise, and his concern was valid.
How were you able to recognize his voice?
I met his father once, said Al-Jahad shortly.
He tapped Zarok's hilt.
I wish Brom had told me he had taken Morzan's sword. I suggest that you don't carry it within Farthen Dur. Many here remember Morzan's time with hate, especially the dwarves.
I'll remember that, promised Aragorn.
Al-Jahad handed Zarok to him.
That reminds me, I have Brom's ring, which he sent as confirmation of his identity. I was keeping it for when he returned to Trondheim. Now that he's dead, I suppose it belongs to you, and I think he would have wanted you to have it.
He opened a desk drawer and took the ring from it.
Aragorn accepted it with reverence.
The symbol cut into the face of the sapphire was identical to the tattoo on Arya's shoulder. He fit the ring onto his index finger, admiring how it caught the light.
I am honored, he said.
Al-Jahad nodded gravely, then pushed back his chair and stood. He faced Saphira and spoke to her, his voice swelling in power.
Do not think that I have forgotten you, O mighty dragon. I have said these things as much for your benefit as for Aragorn's. It is even more important that you know them, for to you falls the task of guarding him in these dangerous times. Do not underestimate your might, nor falter at his side, because without you he will surely fail."
Sapphira lowered her head until their eyes were level, and stared at him through slitted black pupils. They examined each other silently, neither of them blinking. Arjahad was the first to move. He lowered his eyes and said softly, "It is indeed a privilege to meet you."
"He'll do,"
said Sapphira respectfully. She swung her head to face Aragorn.
"Tell him that I am impressed both with Trondhjem and with him. The Empire is right to fear him. Let him know, however, that if he had decided to kill you, I would have destroyed Trondhjem and torn him apart with my teeth."
Aragorn hesitated, surprised by the venom in her voice, then relayed the message. Arjahad looked at her seriously.
"I would expect nothing less from one so noble, but I doubt you could have gotten past the twins."
Sapphira snorted with derision.
"Bah!"
Knowing what she meant, Aragorn said, "Then they must be much stronger than they appear. I think they would be sorely dismayed if they ever faced a dragon's wrath. The two of them might be able to defeat me, but never Sapphira. You should know, a rider's dragon strengthens his magic beyond what a normal magician might have. Brom was always weaker than me because of that. I think that in the absence of riders, the twins have overestimated their power." Arjahad looked troubled.
"Brom was considered one of our strongest spellweavers. Only the elves surpassed him. If what you say is true, we will have to reconsider a great many things."
He bowed to Sapphira.
"As it is, I am glad it wasn't necessary to harm either of you."
Sapphira dipped her head in return.
Arjahad straightened with a lordly air and called, "Horik!" The dwarf hurried into the room and stood before the desk, crossing his arms. Arjahad frowned at him, irritated.
"You've caused me a great deal of trouble, Horik. I've had to listen to one of the twins complain all morning about your insubordination. They won't let it rest until you are punished. Unfortunately, they are right. It's a serious matter that cannot be ignored. An accounting is due."
Horik's eyes flicked towards Aragorn, but his face betrayed no emotion. He spoke quickly in rough tones.
"The Khal were almost around Costa Myrna. They were shooting arrows at the dragon, Aragorn and Murtagh, but the twins did nothing to stop it. Like Shielfen, they refused to open the gates, even though we could see Aragorn shouting the opening phrase on the other side of the waterfall, and they refused to take action when Aragorn did not rise from the water. Perhaps I did wrong, but I couldn't let a rider die."
"I wasn't strong enough to get out of the water myself," offered Aragorn. "I would have drowned if he hadn't pulled me out." Arjahad glanced at him, then asked Oryk seriously,
"And later, why did you oppose them?"
Oryk raised his chin defiantly.
"It wasn't right for them to force their way into Murtagh's mind, but I wouldn't have stopped them if I'd known who he was."
"No, you did the right thing, though it would be simpler if you hadn't. It isn't our place to force our way into people's minds no matter who they are."
Arjahad fingered his dense beard.
"Your actions were honorable, but you did defy a direct order from your commander. The penalty for that has always been death."
Oryk's back stiffened.
"You can't kill him for that! He was only helping me!"
cried Aragorn.
"It isn't your place to interfere," said Arjahad sternly. "Oryk broke the law and must suffer the consequences."
Aragorn started to argue again, but Arjahad stopped him with a raised hand.
"But you are right. The sentence will be mitigated because of the circumstances. As of now, Oryk, you are removed from active service and forbidden to engage in any military activities under my command. Do you understand?"
Oryk's face darkened, but then he only looked confused. He nodded sharply.
"Yes."
"Furthermore, in the absence of your regular duties, I appoint you Aragorn and Sapphira's guide, for the duration of their stay. You are to make sure they receive every comfort and amenity we have to offer. Saphira will stay above Issadar Mithram. Aragorn may have quarters wherever he wants. When he recovers from his trip, take him to the training fields. They're expecting him, said Arjahad, a twinkle of amusement in his eye. Auric bowed low.
I understand.
Very well, you all may go. Send in the twins as you leave. Aragorn bowed and began to leave, then asked, Where can I find Arya? I would like to see her.
No one is allowed to visit her. You will have to wait until she comes to you.
Arjahad looked down at his desk in a clear dismissal. Bless the child, Arjatlam. Aragorn stretched in the hall. He was stiff from sitting so long. Behind him, the twins entered Arjahad's study and closed the door. Aragorn looked at Auric. I'm sorry that you're in trouble because of me, he apologized.
Don't bother yourself, grunted Auric, tugging on his beard. Arjahad gave me what I wanted.
Even Saphira was startled by the statement.
What do you mean? Said Aragorn. You can't train or fight, and you're stuck guarding me? How can that be what you wanted?
The dwarf eyed him quietly.
Arjahad is a good leader. He understands how to keep the law, yet remain just. I have been punished by his command, but I am also one of Hrothgar's subjects. Under his rule, I'm still free to do what I wish.
Aragorn realized it would be unwise to forget Auric's dual loyalty and the split nature of power within Trondheim.
Arjahad just placed you in a powerful position, didn't he?
Auric chuckled deeply.
Well, that he did, and in such a way the twins can't complain about it. This'll irritate them for sure. Arjahad's a tricky one, he is. Come, lad, I'm sure you're hungry, and we have to get your dragon settled in.
Saphira hissed. Aragorn said, Her name is Saphira. Auric made a small bow to her.
My apologies. I'll be sure to remember that.
He took an orange lamp from the wall and led them down the hallway.
Can others in Farthendur use magic?
Asked Aragorn, struggling to keep up with the dwarf's brisk pace. He cradled Zarok carefully, concealing the symbol on the sheath with his arm.
Few enough, said Auric, with a swift shrug under his mail. And the ones we have can't do much more than heal bruises. They've all had to tend to Arya because of the strength needed to heal her.
Except for the twins.
Oi, grumbled Auric. She wouldn't want their help anyway. Their arts are not for healing. Their talents lie in scheming and plotting for power, to everyone else's detriment. Daenor, Arjahad's predecessor, allowed them to join the Varden because he needed their support. You can't oppose the Empire without spellcasters who can hold their own on the field of battle. They're a nasty pair, but they do have their uses.
They entered one of the four main tunnels that divided Trondheim. Clusters of dwarves and humans strolled through it, voices echoing loudly off the polished floor. The conversation stopped abruptly as they saw Saphira, scores of eyes fixed on her. Auric ignored the spectators and turned left, heading toward one of Trondheim's distant gates.
Where are we going? Asked Aragorn.
Out of these halls, so Saphira can fly to the Dragonhold above Isidor Mithram, the Star Rose. The Dragonhold doesn't have a roof. Trondheim's peak is open to the sky like that of Farthendur's, so she, that is you, Saphira, will be able to glide straight down into the hold. It is where the riders used to stay when they visited Trondheim.
Won't it be cold and damp without a roof? Asked Aragorn.
Nay, Auric shook his head. Farthendur protects us from the elements. Neither rain nor snow intrude here. Besides, the hold's walls are lined with marble caves for dragons. They provide all the shelter necessary. All you need fear are the icicles. When they fall, they've been known to cleave a horse in two.
I will be fine, assured Saphira. A marble cave is safer than any of the other places we've stayed.
Perhaps. Do you think Murtagh will be all right?
Arjahad strikes me as an honorable man. Unless Murtagh tries to escape, I doubt he will be harmed.
Aragorn crossed his arms, unwilling to talk further.
He was dazed by the change in circumstances from the day before. Their mad race from Gilead was finally over, but his body expected to continue running and riding. Where are our horses?
In the stables by the gate. We can visit them before leaving Trondheim.
They exited Trondheim through the same gate they had entered. The gold griffins gleamed with coloured highlights garnered from scores of lanterns. The sun had moved during Aragorn's talk with Arjahad. Light no longer entered Farthendur through the crater opening. Without those moted rays, the inside of the hollow mountain was velvety black. The only illumination came from Trondheim, which sparkled brilliantly in the gloom. The city mountain's radiance was enough to brighten the ground hundreds of feet away. Oric pointed at Trondheim's white pinnacle.
"Fresh meat and pure mountain water await you up there," he told Saphira. "You may stay in any of the caves. Once you make your choice, bedding will be laid down in it, and then no one will disturb you."
"I thought we were going to go together. I don't want to be separated," protested Aragorn. Oric turned to him.
"Rider Aragorn, I will do everything to accommodate you. But it would be best if Saphira waits in the Dragonhold while you eat. The tunnels to the banquet halls aren't large enough for her to accompany us."
"Why can't you just bring me food in the hold?"
"Because," said Oric with a guarded expression, "the food is prepared down here, and it is a long way to the top. If you wish, a servant could be sent up to the hold with a meal for you. It will take some time, but you could eat with Saphira then."
"He actually means it," Aragorn thought, astonished that they would do so much for him. But the way Oric said it made him wonder if the dwarf was testing him somehow.
"I'm weary," said Saphira, "and this dragon hold sounds to my liking. Go, have your meal, then come to me. It will be soothing to rest together without fear of wild animals or soldiers. We have suffered the hardships of the trail too long."
Aragorn looked at her thoughtfully, then said to Oric, "I'll eat down here." The dwarf smiled, seeming satisfied. Aragorn unstrapped Saphira's saddle so she could lie down without discomfort. "Would you take Zarok with you?"
"Yes," she said, gathering up the sword and saddle with her claws. "Keep your bow. We must trust these people, though not to the point of foolishness."
"I know," he said, disquieted. With an explosive leap, Saphira swept off the ground and into the still air. The steady whoosh of her wings was the only sound in the darkness. As she disappeared over the rim of Trondheim's peak, Oric let out a long breath.
"Ah, boy, you have been blessed indeed. I find a sudden longing in my heart for open skies and soaring cliffs and the thrill of hunting like a hawk. Still, my feet are better on the ground, preferably under it."
He clapped loudly.
"I neglect my duties as a host. I know you've not dined since that pitiful dinner the twins saw fit to give you, so come. Let's find the cooks and beg meat and bread from them."
Aragorn followed the dwarf back into Trondheim and through a labyrinth of corridors until they came to a long room filled with rows of stone tables only high enough for dwarves. Fires blazed in soapstone ovens behind a long counter. Oric spoke words in an unfamiliar language to a stout, ruddy-faced dwarf, who promptly handed them stone platters piled with steaming mushrooms and fish. Then Oric took Aragorn up several flights of stairs and into a small alcove carved out of Trondheim's outer wall, where they sat cross-legged. Aragorn wordlessly reached for his food. When their platters were empty, Oric sighed with contentment and pulled out a long-stemmed pipe. He lit it, saying,
"A worthy repast, though it needed a good draught of mead to wash it down properly."
Aragorn surveyed the ground below. "Do you farm in Farthendur?"
"No, there's only enough sunlight for moss, mushrooms and mould. Trondheim cannot survive without supplies from the surrounding valleys, which is one reason why many of us choose to live elsewhere in the Beor Mountains."
"Then there are other dwarf cities?"
"Not as many as we would like, and Trondheim is the greatest of them."
Leaning on an elbow, Oric took a deep pull on his pipe.
"You have seen only the lower level, so it hasn't been apparent, but most of Trondheim is deserted. The farther up you go, the emptier it gets. Entire floors have remained untouched for centuries. Most dwarfs prefer to dwell under Trondheim and Farthendur in the caverns and passageways that riddle the rock. Through the centuries we have tunneled extensively under the Beor Mountains. It is possible to walk from one end of the mountain range to the other without ever setting foot on the surface.
It seems like a waste to have all that unused space in Trondheim, commented Aragorn.
Oric nodded.
Some have argued for abandoning this place because of its drain on our resources, but Trondheim does perform one invaluable task.
What's that?
In times of misfortune, it can house our entire nation. There have been only 3 instances in our history when we have been forced to that extreme, but each time it has saved us from certain and utter destruction. That is why we always keep it garrisoned, ready for use.
I've never seen anything as magnificent, admitted Aragorn.
Oric smiled around his pipe.
I'm glad you find it so. It took generations to build Trondheim, and our lives are much longer than those of men. Unfortunately, because of the cursed empire, few outsiders are allowed to see its glory.
How many Varden are here?
Dwarves or humans?
Humans. I want to know how many have fled the empire. Oric exhaled a long puff of smoke that coiled lazily around his head.
There are about 4,000 of your kin here, but that's a poor indicator of what you want to know. Only people who wish to fight come here. The rest of them are under King Orin's protection in Sorda.
So few? Thought Aragorn with a sinking feeling. The royal army alone numbered nearly 16,000 when it was fully marshalled, not counting the Urgals. Why doesn't Orin fight the Empire himself? He asked.
If he were to show open hostility, said Oric, Galbatorix would crush him. As it is, Galbatorix withholds that destruction because he considers Sorda a minor threat, which is a mistake. It's through Orin's assistance that the Varden have most of their weapons and supplies. Without him, there would be no resisting the Empire. Don't despair over the number of humans in Trondheim. There are many dwarves here, many more than you have seen, and all will fight when the time comes. Orin has also promised us troops for when we battle Galbatorix. The elves pledged their help as well.
Aragorn absently touched Saphira's mind, and found her busy eating a bloody haunch with gusto. He noticed once more the hammer and stars engraved on Oric's helm. What does that mean? I saw it on the floor in Trondheim. Oric lifted the iron-bound cap off his head and brushed a rough finger over the engraving.
It is the symbol of my clan. We are the Ingetum, metal workers and master smiths. The hammer and stars are inlaid into Trondheim's floor because it was the personal crest of Corgan, our founder. One clan to rule, with 12 surrounding. King Hrothgar is Durgrim's Dingetum as well, and has brought my house much glory, much honour.
When they returned the platters to the cook, they passed a dwarf in the hall. He stopped before Aragorn, bowed, and said respectfully,
Ajutlam.
The dwarf left Aragorn fumbling for an answer, flushed with unease, yet also strangely pleased with the gesture. No one had bowed to him before. What did he say? He asked, leaning closer to Oric.
Oric shrugged, embarrassed.
It's an elven word that was used to refer to the riders. It means silver hand.
Aragorn glanced at his gloved hand, thinking of the Gedwi Ignazia that whitened his palm.
Do you wish to return to Saphira?
Is there somewhere I could bathe first? I haven't been able to wash off the grime of the road for a long time. Also, my shirt is bloodstained and torn, and it stinks. I'd like to replace it, but I don't have any money to buy a new one. Is there any way I could work for one?
Do you seek to insult Hrothgar's hospitality, Aragorn? Demanded Oric. As long as you are in Trondheim, you won't have to buy a thing. You'll pay for it in other ways. Arjahard and Hrothgar will see to that. Come, I'll show you where to wash, then fetch you a shirt.
He took Aragorn down a long staircase until they were well below Trondheim. The corridors were tunnels now, which cramped Aragorn because they were only 5 feet high, and all the lanterns were red.
So the light doesn't blind you when you leave or enter a dark cavern, explained Oric.
They entered a bare room with a small door on the far side. Oric pointed.
The pools are through there, along with brushes and soap. Leave your clothes here. I'll have new ones waiting when you get out."
Aragorn thanked him and started to undress. It felt oppressive being alone underground, especially with the low rock ceiling. He stripped quickly and, cold, hurried through the door into total darkness. He inched forward until his foot touched warm water, then eased himself into it. The pool was mildly salty but soothing and calm. For a moment he was afraid of drifting away from the door into deeper water, but as he waded forward, he discovered the water reached only to his waist. He groped over a slippery wall until he found the soap and brushes, then scrubbed himself. Afterward, he floated with his eyes closed, enjoying the warmth. When he emerged, dripping, into the lighted room, he found a towel, a fine linen shirt, and a pair of breeches. The clothes fit him reasonably well. Satisfied, he went out into the tunnel. Oric was waiting for him, pipe in hand. They climbed the stairs back up into Trondheim, then exited the city mountain. Aragorn gazed at Trondheim's peak and called Saphira with his mind. As she flew down from the Dragonhold, he asked, "How do you communicate with people at the top of Trondheim?"
Oric chuckled. "That's a problem we solved long ago. You didn't notice, but behind the open arches that line each level is a single unbroken staircase that spirals around the wall of Trondheim's central chamber. The stairs climb all the way to the Dragonhold above Isidur Mithrim. We call it Volturin, the endless staircase. Running up or down it isn't swift enough for an emergency, nor convenient enough for casual use. Instead, we use flashing lanterns to convey messages. There is another way, too, though it is seldom used. When Volturin was constructed, a polished trough was cut next to it. The trough acts as a giant slide as high as a mountain."
Aragorn's lips twitched with a smile. "Is it dangerous?"
"Do not think of trying it. The slide was built for dwarves and is too narrow for a man. If you slipped out of it, you could be thrown into the stairs and against the arches, perhaps even into empty space."
Saphira landed a spear's throw away, her scales rustling dryly. As she greeted Aragorn, humans and dwarves trickled out of Trondheim, gathering around her with murmurs of interest. Aragorn regarded the growing crowd uneasily.
"You'd better go," said Oric, pushing him forward. "Meet me by this gate tomorrow morning. I'll be waiting."
Aragorn balked. "How will I know when it's morning?"
"I'll have someone wake you. Now go."
Without further protest, Aragorn slipped through the jostling group that surrounded Saphira and jumped onto her back. Before she could take off, an old woman stepped forward and grasped Aragorn's foot with a fierce grip. He tried to pull away, but her hand was like an iron talon around his ankle. He could not break her tenacious hold. The burning grey eyes she fixed on him were surrounded by a lifetime's worth of wrinkles. The skin was folded in long creases down her sunken cheeks. A tattered bundle rested in the crook of her left arm. Frightened, Aragorn asked, "What do you want?" The woman tilted her arm, and a cloth fell from the bundle, revealing a baby's face. Hoarse and desperate, she said,
"The child has no parents. There is no one to care for her but me, and I am weak. Bless her with your power, Arjitlam. Bless her for luck."
Aragorn looked to Oric for help, but the dwarf only watched with a guarded expression. The small crowd fell silent, waiting for his response. The woman's eyes were still fastened on him.
"Bless her, Arjitlam. Bless her," she insisted.
Aragorn had never blessed anyone. It was not something done lightly in Alagasia, as a blessing could easily go awry and prove to be more curse than boon, especially if it was spoken with ill intent or lack of conviction.
"Do I dare take that responsibility?" he wondered.
"Bless her, Harjitlam. Bless her."
Suddenly decided, he searched for a phrase or expression to use. Nothing came to mind until, inspired, he thought of the ancient language. This would be a true blessing, spoken with words of power, by one of power. He bent down and tugged the glove off his right hand. Laying his palm on the babe's brow, he intoned,
"Atra giule un ilion tauter ono, un atra ono veise scola fra rauter."
The words left him unexpectedly weak, as if he had used magic. He slowly pulled the glove back on and said to the woman, "That is all I can do for her. If any words have the power to forestall tragedy, it will be those."
"Thank you, Harshitlam,"
she whispered, bowing slightly. She started to cover the baby again, but Saphira snorted and twisted until her head loomed over the child. The woman grew rigid, her breath